Boker Tov, good morning. Nice to see everybody here. Yeah, a few people away today, so enjoying the sunny weather. Maybe it was last week's shiur that scared people away a little bit, but because we're dealing with the complicated and challenging issues of gender interactions. Last week we talked about transgender issues, very, very tricky. This week we're on the relatively safer ground of Shomer Negiah, Shmirat Negiah, and modern applications of that, particularly two which I want to get to, which are the issues of handshaking, which is an old question, but it's always good to review the sources and see maybe some new ideas. And then the classic that we've all experienced of the seat switch, where the plane's ready to take off, but some gentleman or some lady refuses to sit down because they won't sit next to someone of the opposite sex. And I actually was on a flight to New York, from New York rather, a few months ago, where everybody was ready, but there was one particular woman who would not sit down next to the man that she was seated next to on the plane, insisted that the only answer was for her to be upgraded to first class, where she could have her own seat. And in the end, she did not get upgraded to first class. But this is something which causes frustration in some areas. Certain people get very offended by this. I know somebody who sued the airline for having allowed this, etc. This is not a straightforward issue. So what I want to do, with your permission, I have a bit of a bad throat this morning, so I won't be able to get too loud. But I want to look at some of the sources and have a good analysis of this. We need to think about the issue of Shmirat Negiah, whether it's d'oraita or d'rabbanan. That's going to have a major impact. What about different types of touching, professional, medical care, therapies, handshaking, like we said? Which people is it relating to? What about family members? What about children? What about people of the same gender? How does this impact on sitting next to people? As we said, I require to switch seats. I'd like to start with what became something of an infamous piece in the New York Times in 2002. There was a fellow called Randy Cohen, obviously Jewish, who had an article there, a regular piece called The Ethicist. And Randy Cohen, don't know who exactly, called The Ethicist. And he wrote this piece every week, and yes, obviously Jewish, yes. Oh, she. It's a he. Randy Cohen is a man. Randy Cohen is a man. And he has a question here from a woman. The courteous and competent real estate agent I just hired to rent my house shocked and offended me, says his questioner, when, after we signed our contract, he refused to shake my hand, saying that as an Orthodox Jew, he did not touch women. As a feminist, asked the questioner, I oppose sex discrimination of all sorts. However, I also support freedom of religious expression. How do I balance these conflicting values? Should I tear up our contracts? JL from New York. So answers Mr. Cohen, the ethicist, and this became one of the most debated and responded to pieces in his column that he had on a regular basis. And he answers the following. The culture clash may not allow you to reconcile the values you esteem. Though the agent dealt you only a petty slight without ill intent, you are entitled to work with someone who will treat you with the dignity and respect he shows his male clients. If this involves only his own person, adherence to laws concerning diet or dress, for example, you should, of course, be tolerant. But his actions directly affect you. And sexism is sexism, even when motivated by religious convictions. I believe you should tear up the contract. Very interesting response from the ethicist, that you should tear up the contract because she's offended. Interesting. Had he declined to shake hands with everybody, there would be no problem. What he may not do, however, is render a class of people untouchable. He's bringing up all the press, the buttons, the hot buttons of, you're now one of the untouchables, he said. Of course, he doesn't mention that had it been an Orthodox woman, real estate agent, she also would not have shaken hands with him. It doesn't make him untouchable, whatever. Were he, say, an airline ticket clerk who refused to touch Asian Americans, he would find himself in hot water, and rightly so. Bias on the basis of sex is equally discreditable. So now he's labeled this man with racism as well, the same kind of brush. Some religions and some civil societies that assign men and women distinct spheres argue that while those two spheres are different, neither is inferior to the other. This sort of reasoning was rejected in 1954 in the great school desegregation case Brown versus the Board of Education, when the Supreme Court declared that separate is by its very nature unequal. That's a pretty good ethical guideline for ordinary life. And basically he said this man who didn't shake your hand is equivalent to someone who supports segregation of black and white students in schools and therefore tear up the contracts. And completely unacceptable. Now, I brought you in the footnote there, Jonathan Rosenblum, who'd expect to weigh in on this, immediately weighed in on this and wrote a counter column and a response to this, which you can look at from the sources there at the bottom. Rabbi Norman Lamb wrote a response to this. This became a real cause célèbre, but I thought it was a nice introduction to this issue of Shmirat Negiah and how some people clearly get very unhappy about the whole thing. What are the sources? So the Torah sources are very interesting. Let's first of all deal with the Torah sources, and then we'll deal with the Talmudic sources. Source number two. So there are two psukim in Achremos. The pasuk there says, Ish, ish, el she'er b'saro lo tikrevu legalot erva, ani Hashem. That no man may get close to shar b'saro, to those who is related to, if you like, we'll see define that, may not get close to reveal an erva. It brings this idea of erva. Erva is a certain kind of sexual relationship between certain people, which is the highest level prohibition of sexual relationships in the Torah. It includes, obviously, adultery, where people are already married, certain incestuous relatives of one spouse, certain spouses of different relatives, in-laws, step relations, a woman who is nida, we'll cover that in a second, and then broader issues like homosexuality, etc., I put in the note. There are other relationships in the Torah which are not erva, which are still prohibited, but on a different level, on a lower level. For example, a Kohen marrying or having a relationship with a divorced woman, that is prohibited according to the Torah, but it's not an erva. Says this pasuk, where you have an erva, there is additionally a verse, there's a line of loy tikrevu. You may not get close, and we'll see what that means in just a second. And then at the end of number two, Vel Isha Benidat Tumata, and this is talking about one's own wife, if she is in a state of Nida, Loti Krav, again, even though the husband is married to her, Loti Krav Legalot Ervata. He may not get close, the word Kreva, in order to reveal an Erva. What does this Loti Kravu mean? Now clearly, the Pasuk is talking about sexual relations. But is Loi Tikrevu any more than that? So on a pshat level, the answer is no. Loi Tikrevu is just another way of saying they may not have a relationship. And that's what the Ibn Ezra says in number three. Loi Tikrevu Kinui, this is just another way of saying L'shchiva, that they may not sleep with each other. And we'll see soon, Chazal, however, say that Loi Tikrevu actually, no, does something a little bit different, takes it beyond that to a different sphere. What's interesting, if I may just in parentheses talk for a couple of minutes about this issue of an isha, benidat tumata, what about an unmarried woman? What's the issue? Is there an heir relationship? And of course, in the handshaking and seat-switching debate, this is something that we need to think about. Let's say there's a woman sitting next to someone or shaking one's hand that's not married to anybody. So the Orach HaShulchan points out, number four, Upnuya Nida, a single woman who herself has not gone to the mikveh, he erva. She is the same level of erva. Kokol arayot, like any other of the arayot, because single women do not go to the mikveh today. The question is why? Why don't single women go to the mikveh today? There used to be a common practice back in the time of the Beit HaMikdash and after when Tumah and Tahara were practiced, that everybody went to the mikveh all the time. Because if, let's say, a family of Kohanim, the woman had to eat Trumah, the men had to eat Trumah, people were going to the, in and out of the mikveh all the time. And so Chazal never put a specific rabbinic prohibition on single women going to the mikveh, because single women had to go to the mikveh for all sorts of Tumah and Tahara purposes. However, already from the time of the Rivash, and I brought you in number five, the Rivash was living in Spain in the 14th century. He writes there, he's asked a very interesting question. His tshuvas, he was asked by his questioner, why don't we encourage single women to go to the mikvah today? That would avoid all sorts of even worse problems where there's all sorts of sexual immorality. This is not a new phenomenon. Even in the Middle Ages, this was something people were dealing with. The writer there is concerned people will have relations with non-Jewish women or with women who haven't gone to the mikvah. They won't stop if you don't let the women go to the mikvah. Mikvah, he says, no, you can't do that. Interesting. Just read the first couple of lines. Aval pnuya, he says, afilu beloy eit nidata. Even if a single woman is not a nida, she has gone to the mikveh, v'yata asurah im midoraita midrabanan, there is still a prohibition of relationships between them, v'akosat tzaveach loy tiyeh kadesha mibnot Yisrael. Without getting into the whole debate there, there is a separate mitzvah in the Torah that you are not allowed to have a kadesha amongst the daughters of Israel, and that says the Rivash, whether on a deraita or a drabanan level, there's a debate, and I put some more in the notes there, means that you cannot have a woman who is willing to have relationships beyond or outside marriage, even if she goes to the mikveh. And she says, it has two lines from the bottom, Amasha nifleta, and that you express surprise to me, Eich loy tiknu tfila lepnuya. Why didn't the rabbis encourage a woman to go to the mikveh? Kedei shelo yichshelu barabim, to avoid greater problems. Ein kan makom tama. There's no question, there's no surprise there. Shahari kevesha pnuya asura kemoshikasavnu. Since anyway a single woman would not be allowed to have a relationship before she's married, even if she did go to the mikveh, adarabah, then on the contrary, im haita tovelet, if she went to the mikveh, hayaba michshol, this would actually cause more problems. Shahayu mekinum ba'isura, because then people would take the whole issue of premarital relations much less seriously, kevan she'ein asura elamid rabbanan, etc. And this is well known for many hundreds of years. There's been a strong minhag, maybe even a cherem, that single women do not go to the mikveh, and therefore, in terms of shomer negiah, there will be no distinction. Certainly from the age of, let's say, 11 or 12, Rav Avadi Yosef in number 6 has a very interesting tshuva, where he's asked the same question. He reinforces based on the Rivash and says that yes, of course, single women may not go to the mikvah. And when questions about the fact, well, look, there are individual single women who do go to the mikvah. And we know this. This is an interesting question in our society. It's been debated in the papers. There are a few angles to this. In modern Israeli society, for example, there was a whole court case a few years ago where there was a petition that single women must be allowed access to the mikveh in Israel because the mikveh is a publicly funded institution. They're funded by the state, and therefore the state is not the one that can refuse access to these women. And this became one of the battlegrounds between the Bagats and the Rabbanut, between the High Court and the rabbinic establishment as to who controls the mikvehs. Are they publicly funded institutions and therefore have to be available to all who wish them? And this, of course, impacts on the issue of non-Orthodox conversions as well. Should the mikvahs in Israel be open to non-Orthodox groups for their own purposes as public institutions? Or are they not? Are they controlled by the Orthodox Rabbanut? This is a whole question. And it's well known that single women do use the mikveh. The question is, and the side question is, even on a communal level, they obviously cannot be encouraged to do that because there's a clear prohibition here for many hundreds of years. What do people advise individuals on a private level? That's an interesting question itself. And I've brought some issues in the footnotes there. But Rav Avadi Yosef points out that it's one thing when individuals do things which are, okay, no one's judging other people, they have their own halakhic observance. It's another thing, he says, when the community sanctions a behavioral pattern which the halakha says is not acceptable. He says, that's much worse. Because when individuals do what they do, okay, it's an individual cheshbon. When the community does, he compares that to the pilegesh migivah, the issue of what was going on in society at that time in Tanakh, and it was the communal sanction of the behavior that was more of the problem than the actual behavior itself, or at least as much of a problem. He talks more about that. An interesting question, of course, is what if a woman goes to the mikveh perfectly legitimately when she's single? Which single women legitimately go to the mikveh before they get married? So what's the status in terms of shmirat negiah of a single woman who has been to the mikveh totally legitimately and she's now just before her wedding? So why is that relevant? So it becomes relevant, what if the chasan and the kala want to have photos taken before the wedding? And now, there is an Ashkenazi minhag, which is strong in some circles and less strong in others, that the kala and the chasan don't meet each other before the wedding for a week. But that doesn't really have a lot of halachic basis to it. And let's say, I'm not discouraging the minhag people, that's what we did when we got married, that's what my daughter did when she got married, but let's say the chasan kala says we want to have pictures before the wedding, the family's together, etc. Are the chasan and kala allowed to touch each other before the wedding, hold hands for the pictures? Interesting question. Because on the one hand, well, of course not, they're not married yet. On the other hand, well, she's not Erva because she's been to the mikveh, legitimately been to the mikveh, so what's the issue there? Which is an interesting question. Now, you obviously will find Poskim very slow to say that that is acceptable because of where that, what that sounds like and where that sounds like it's leading, but it's an interesting question which is raised and impacts on what we're talking about. But clearly the issue of single women in the mikveh is one which is dealt with by the Poskim, and even though it hasn't gone away, for our purposes it's very straightforward. Let's go on to page number 3. What are the Talmudic sources? Where do we get this idea of Shomei Negir at all? So the Sifra in Achremos says the following. I only know about a full sexual relationship of Erva, says the Medrash there. Minan shaloti krav. How do I know that you can't even get close to that, but short of the full thing? Talmud Loma, oh, loti krav. Ainli ela nida baltikrav. I only know about the case of the nida. How do I know about baltigale, that you can't, baltikrav, baltigale, you can't get close or even touch, if that in that sense? Minai lakol arayot. How do I know this applies to all arayot? Baltikravu or baltiglu. Talmud loma lo tikravu legalot. Two psukim, one with a nida, one beyond a nida, that says, as far as Chazal is concerned, that not only does the Torah prohibit a full relationship, but the Torah also prohibits any kind of touching which is short of a full relationship. Now, what kind of touching is that? Before we get into that, I brought you in Avastar Rebbe Nosson, in number 8, a very interesting analysis. It says, Ezu siag she'asta Torah ledivareha. Where do we ever find that the Torah makes a fence for itself? We talked about this in this forum before. Meaning, we're used to the idea that the rabbis make a fence, which protects a Torah, like Muksa, for example. You can't pick up a pen on Shabbos because you can't come to write, and if you pick up a pen, you'll come to write. There are other reasons for Muksa as well, but that's one. How do we know the Torah does that sometimes itself? So the Pirkei Rabbi, Avos Rebbe Nosson says in number 8 as follows. Harihu oimer ve'elisha benidat sumata lo tikrav, yachol yichab kena, I might have thought that you could hug, v'yinash kena, or kiss, v'yidaber ima dvarim betelim, or just flirt. Interestingly, just dibur. Talmud loma, lo tikrav. Don't get close. Yochel tishan imob begadeh al amita. Maybe you could just share a bed fully clothed, meaning nothing inappropriate is actually going to happen. No, talmud loma, lo tikrav. Again, the Chazal seem to be saying there that lo tikravu goes way beyond a full prohibition of a sexual relationship, and it sounds from this that it may even go beyond touching. It says they can't even flirt around with each other, because that's also something which is a fence that the Torah makes for itself. We'll see on a halachic level, it's not quite that far on the Torah level, but we find other examples of this as well. Where else do we find the Torah makes a fence for itself? Obvious cases. Pesach. The Torah says, do not eat chametz. There is a chi of kares for eating chametz. So the Torah says, don't even own chametz. Don't even have it in your house. That's also a Torah prohibition. Clearly a fence in case you come to eat it. Another example. A Nazir is not allowed to drink wine. He or she may not drink wine. Clearly the main issue is drinking wine. The Torah says, you know something? Don't even eat grapes. Even grapes. Grapes is also a Torah prohibition. What's wrong with grapes? The real problem is wine. No, grapes are an extension of that. Another example. The Torah says, do not have idols. Do not make idols for idol worship. So the Torah also says, and you know something? Don't even make statues which are for aesthetic purposes, which are not idolatrous. And we had a shiur about that once, if you remember. You're not allowed to actually make a sculpture of a human shape, even if it's just for aesthetic purposes. Again, a fence around the Torah prohibition itself, and there are other examples too. Don't bear a grudge in case you come to take a revenge. And therefore, here too, Chazal says, don't touch someone who is an erva in case you come to go beyond that touching. However, it's not so straightforward. There is another Gemara that seems clearly to say, touching? Touching is Darabonon. Touching is not Doraisa. And in the words 7 and 8 says, touching is Doraisa. Number 9 says, no. Da'am Rebbe Padat, loy asra Torah ala kruva shal gilui arayas bilvad. Rabbi Padat says, no, the Torah itself only prohibits actual full sexual relations between a man and a woman who is an erva. Shene'emar ish ish al kol she'erva sarah lo tikravu legalos erva. It says explicitly, lo tikravu doesn't mean that the Torah extends that. The actual prohibition is clearly the full prohibition. Amar Ullah, and then Ullah comes along and says, okay, but on a Durabonon level, afilu shum kruva osa, even any kind of connection is Otan Adrabana level. Mishum, and he brings a rabbinic idea, Lech Lech Amri Nazir is Chor Schor Lekar Maloti Krav. That's also from Nazir, where the rabbis will say, you know something? To the Nazir, don't even go in the vineyard. You're asking for trouble. And therefore this idea, Lech Lech Amri Nazir, go and tell the Nazir, go around the vineyard and don't walk through the vineyard. So that's a rabbinic prohibition. So we have a machloikas here as to whether the loitikravu, the touching issue, shomenegir, is the raisa or the rabbonim. It's a machloikas in Chazal. One thing is for sure, it's a dangerous zone. I brought you just three words in number 10, a famous Gemara in Ksubas, ein apitropos le'arayas. An apitropos is a guardian, which means, what the Torah says, the Chazal is saying, when it comes to sexual drives, there's no apitropos, there's nothing holding people back. Sometimes in the most unexpected of situations, people lose control, and therefore that's worth certainly bearing in mind as a hashkafic general approach, that even though there's a halachic framework here, the issue is one which is fraught with difficulty. And everybody knows there are cases of people who've thrown away their whole life, their whole marriage and their whole career for a few minutes of inappropriate behavior. That's something that doesn't make any logical sense. Ein apitropos la'arayas, people act very irrationally in these situations. So what's the psak? We have a machlokas in the Gemara. Is it doraisa or is it derabbanan? Shomer negir, shmiras negir. So the Rambam classically rules doraisa. Look in number 11, hamitzvah hashin nun gimel. Mitzvah number 353, he says, in the Sefer Mitzvahs. He says, hiranu mikiruv la'echad me'achad mekol arayas. The Torah tells us not to get close to one of the arayas. Afilu b'loy bia, even if there's no full relationship. Kagoin chibuk, like hugging, vanish, nishika, kissing, vahadoyma lahemi pu'ula chaznota, any of these sexual connections. V'huamri taleva, ataramizeh, ish, he quotes the potuk again, ki'ilu yoma loitik v'mehem kiruv yavi, yavi legalot erve. Anything that might lead to the full sexual relationship, you can't do that either. Amru says the Rambam, v'nichlusu anafasha ta'osos, there's a chi of kores, it says there's a kores on these prohibitions. Matamazama, what's the Torah telling us? The Fishinema Loy Sikrav, but since now I know there's a Torah prohibition of Shomer Negir, Yochel Yehechayavim Kores Alakrevi, you might have thought the Torah imposes Kores also on the touching. No. Talmud Loma Ha'oisus Loy Hakrevus. Only the people who actually fully have the relationship is Kores, but the Shomer Negir is never Kores. The Rambam wants to make that clear, but he says it's nevertheless awesome in our Torah. We'll see this becomes very important. This categorization right at the beginning here, when we actually ask the question of handshaking and seat switching, we need to know what we're talking about. If we're talking about Doraisa, Drabonon, etc., it's going to make a big difference. The Rambam clearly holds that Shemirat Negir is Doraisa. The Ramban, Nachmanides, disagrees. On his comments on the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he says, number 12, Kosev HaRav, the Rav, Rav Maimonides, has written, V'amitzvah shlosh me'oz v'chamishim v'shalosh, shenimnu mehitadein v'ach mekol eile harayis. You're not allowed to have close relationships touching the harayis. V'afilu b'loy b'ya, even if there's no full relationship, k'goyin chibug v'nishuk v'hadoyim elahem v'hulis amuk. Fine. V'zimah. Ne'ili HaRav, matzah b'raisa. He says, the Rambam has got this from the b'raisa. Hamufureshet. And he said, I understand where the Rambam got this from. This is not, he didn't make this up. It's based on a Gemara. Aval, kefi ha'iyun b'talmud. When you look more carefully in the Talmud, he says, Eina davakein. I don't think this is true. She'yiyeh b'kreva she'ein b'gilui erva k'gon chidu v'nishu lavu malchus. I don't think that shmiras negiyah, the touching itself, is a full doraisa. He goes with the other Gemara, the Gemara in Brachos that we saw, that actually it is, in Shabbos, excuse me, that actually it is an Issa Drabbanon, or, and he raises a fascinating halachic point, maybe it's somewhere in between. What does it mean? Min ha-tora d'cholda mithanim isura isura hu ke'ein v'chavti shir. Maybe it's like a chavti shir on a Torah level. What does that mean, a chavti shir? So, on Shabbos, I think it's well known that if you carry, says the Gemara, a certain amount on Shabbos, or if you cook a certain amount on Shabbos, or if you build a certain amount on Shabbos, that's where the chiyuv of Malkus kicks in. That's when a person will be obligated in kares or misa or whatever it is. But there's a shir. What about a chatzi shir? What if you carry a tiny little seed in your pocket? Or if you cook a droplet of water on Shabbos? Is that still prohibited? So we pass down, based on the Rabbi Yochanan and the Gemara, that yes, chavti shir osa midoraisa. It's not the full deal, but it's still a kind of quantitative smaller version of it. Says the Ramban, a fascinating thing here. Maybe Shmirat Negiya is a chatsi shir of the full deal. Maybe he says touching is actually also Minat Torah, but it's a qualitative chatsi shir rather than a quantitative chatsi shir. Fascinating idea. But he says one thing is for sure. I don't think it's the same as a full relationship. Either it's the Rabbonon or it's the Raisa on a different kind of level, and the posuk itself is an asmachta ba'alma. This is quite a well-known idea. Sometimes Chazal bring a posuk and base a halacha on that, and that's not a limud, but it's an asmachta. Asmachta from the word somech, to lean upon, meaning, this is actually in the halachic process, is very important. Sometimes Chazal start from the verse and learn something out, and they discover the halacha. Sometimes they create the halacha and learn something back in. If you want to be precise, it's the difference between exegesis and esegesis. Exegesis is they learn something out from the posuk. It's there. We just pulled it out. We found it there. And sometimes Chazal say, no, we want to create a new halacha, and we'll hook it. We'll find a link with a verse. That's called an asmachta. And says the Ramban, Shomer Negiya, Shmirah Negiya is an asmachta, and it's not coming out. It's learning back in, and it's on a different level. But the Ramban, as we said before, said clearly it's Shomer Negiya is the Raisa, and in number 13 he passes that way, but he adds a couple of very important words. Look in 13, because this will be the basis of our discussion in a few minutes. Kol haba el erva, says the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, anyone who has a relationship with an erva, mina arayas, from any of the arayas, but it's not the full sexual relation, but it's derech evarim, they just touch each other, or shechabak, they hug, v'nashak, or they kiss, derech taiva. Now what does that mean? Derech taiva. In a way which is
less
sexual, let's say. There's a sensual or sexual connection. V'nehene b'kirav basar, and they get pleasure from that touching. Hare zo lokem min haTorah. That's what Shmiras Negiya is. That's lokem min haTorah. Shne'emar levilti asod michukos haTo'evot. He brings a pasuk actually the Gemara never brought from the end of Achrei Mos. Don't do these chukot Toivot, interesting, which the nations around you do. These rules, these norms, the Targum Unkelus says, translated as nimusim, as sort of the social niceties, which says the Torah are actually toivot, which are really unacceptable to us. You can't do those things. And then he brings lo sikru galas erva kloma lo sikru the varim hamevim lidekilo erva. But the Rambam said a very interesting thing there. The Rambam said that sensual or sexual touching is shomer negiya. What about touching which is not? Now, for the first time, we have to ask that question. So far, all we talked about is touching. Now the Rambam's saying, well, there's touching and there's touching. Some touching is a doctor treating a patient. Some touching is a boyfriend and a girlfriend. They're very, very different kinds. It sounds from the Rambam that what's prohibited under shomer negiya is derech taiva. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah, I'm not going to read it all in number 14, leaves that expression out, and he says basically any touching, it sounds like any touching is prohibited as shomer negiya, and he doesn't distinguish, and he brings the case of the Nazir, just like the Nazir is not allowed to eat grapes on a Torah level, even though there's nothing wrong with grapes. Grapes are very innocuous, because we don't want him to eat wine, so too you're not allowed to touch, even if the touching is also innocuous, because it might lead to other things. But the Rambam didn't sound that way, and the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Rambam. Because if we look in number 15, and this is where we get into Halacha Lamaisa, that the halachic consensus follows not the stricter opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah, which is that all touching is prohibited on the Torah level no matter what. And it doesn't follow the more lenient opinion of the Ramban, which is that really the touching is the Rabbonon, or some kind of chetishir. It follows the Ramban. Look in number 15. Haba al achas min arayis. It's a Shulchan Aruch. Derech evarim, he quotes the Rambam, anyone who has a connection with anyone who's an erva, and again I stress it's someone who's an erva, or shechavak, v'nashek, v'nena, v'kir vasa, or they kissed and they hugged, etc. Hare ze loike. That is also Malkus. Now he doesn't actually say the words derech taiva, which is interesting. We'll see there's a debate as to exactly what he means. The later Meforshim bring the view of the Ramban that it's the Rabbanon, but the consensus of most of the Achronim is that Shomer Negiya is indeed a Doraisa. On that basis, and we'll have to define what kind of touching really is the Doraisa touching, on that basis logically, go over to page 5, the Ramah throws in an important point. Now, we all know that if a person is told they have to die rather than break the Torah, The response is, no, actually I'm going to break the Torah and not die. V'chai ba'em. A person has to live through living through the Torah but not die. There are three exceptions. As we all know, the big three exceptions are Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, immorality, and murder. In those situations, a person would, God forbid, have to die rather than break the Torah. How far does that extend? Meaning, each of those categories of murder, of immorality, of idolatry, have subcategories. Would a person have to die, according to the halacha, even not to breach the subcategories? For example, you're not allowed to embarrass somebody in public. Say, Chazal, that's almost like murder. Does that mean that really is murder? Does that mean it's a subcategory of murder? Does that mean a person has to die rather than embarrass someone else in public? That's an interesting question, not for today. The Rama wants to know about Shmiras Negir. He looks at number 16. V'chol iser avoidus kochavim v'gilu yorais v'shvichas domim. Any of the big three that we're talking about, afal pisha ebo misa, even if we're talking about a lower level where there is no death penalty, raklav ba'alma, just a prohibition on the Torah alone, tzarich lehareik v'lo ya'avor. A person says the Rama has to die rather than commit. Therefore, if you take that to its obvious logical conclusion, since the Shulchan Aruch paskens that Shmiras Negir, certainly of a sensual nature, is a Torah prohibition, and since the Ramah clearly says one has to die rather than commit a Torah prohibition, now you understand where there are poskim that are going to come along and say that you should rather die than shake somebody's hand of the opposite sex, because if that's Derech Taiva, if that's Shomin Negir, and it's a Torah prohibition, and the Ramah says Yarek Val Yavor, then posh, it's obvious, you have to do that. So that's where people are coming from, and they're not just crazy zealots, without, they're coming straight from this analysis. Now, we are not going to conclude that today, you might be relieved to know, but you have to understand where people are coming from when they go through that analysis. So now let's hit the key question, which is, fine, where are we up to so far? Shmiras Negir is a Torah prohibition, like the Rambam says, and it attracts all of the chumras of that in that sense. What kind of touching is Shmiras Negir? Now, if you look at number 18, the Beit Yosef raises an interesting question. He quotes the Trumas Hadeshim, the Kasav over Trumas Hadeshim. Now, the Beit Yosef is the Shulchan Aruch, okay? The Trumas Hadeshim was 100 years earlier, 1400s. And he says the following, B'shem God Echad, there's a question, there's a medical question. The Isha Nida Chayla, what happens if a person's wife, who is Nida, is sick? U'ba'ala Rofe, and her husband is a doctor. Is he allowed to treat her if she's sick? Says the Trumas Hadeshen, Asur l'mashesh la'azofek. He's not allowed to take her heartbeat. Now, actually, I'm not sure this is talking about pulse. I think this may be talking about the actual heartbeat, because I'm not sure in the 14th century, 15th century, they actually had understanding of pulse. Yeah, I was going to look this up before I came in this morning. You can look it up for homework and check. But he can't take her pulse, or maybe this means actually feel for a heartbeat. Can't do that. Now, why not? Why can't the husband treat the wife? She may be in danger. V'nira midravarav. She'afilu v'she'ein rofe zulato. Asur. It sounds like even when there's no other doctor there, then I'm sorry, there's nothing you can do. You can't touch your wife if she's sick, even if you're the only doctor in town. V'gam b'tshuvas haRamban. And also the Ramban says this. Asur l'baal l'mashesh defek ishto. The man is not allowed to take the wife's pulse if she's a nida. U'mihu. But the Ramban says, Im ha'choli mesukan, if she's life-threateningly or potentially life-threateningly ill, the ain sham roif'im, and there are no other doctors, mashma k'sat mitvarev d'shari, then of course it's allowed, mishum pikuach nefesh. Straightforward. However, that's the Ramban. What did the Ramban, Nachmanides, hold on Shomin Negir? Daraita or Drabonon? Drabonon. Eladi'ika l'meima l'taimei azel. But you could say the Ramban, in allowing the doctor to treat his wife, if she's a nida, was going according to his reasoning. The Savan Negir's nida eina isra elamid rabbonon. Because he holds the Shomin Negir's rabbonon. Aval haRambam, but the Rambam that we actually rule like in the Shulchan Aruch, the Negir's erva asura min haTorah, it's a Torah prohibition, hacha afal pisha yeshva pikuach nefesh, he raises the interesting question, frightening question in a way, that even if the wife is, God forbid, dying, efsha da asur mishum da havi avizrai de gilei arayis. Maybe he's still not allowed to touch her, because it's real Gilui Arayos, according to the Rambam, and it's Yarek Val Yavor. Wow. Now, this Beit Yosef caused a real stir. Because the Beit Yosef is suggesting that Shomin Negir, even between a husband and wife, and the truth is, actually, the husband and wife scenario may be worse, because there's more suggestion of intimacy between a husband and wife than between two strangers. On the other hand, the wife is dying here, or potentially so. Are you going to tell me that the husband can't treat the wife because it's Shemiras Negiah, says the Beis Yosef? Yeah, according to Rambam, that might be. The Shach comes along and says, absolutely no way. That's absolutely not what we're talking about. And this Shach becomes the basis for the Shilas of handshaking we're going to see right now. The Shach, 200 years later in the 1600s, comes along in number 19 and says, no. Even according to the Rambam, who holds the Shmiras Negiah is the writer, if the touching is non-sensual, there is no problem. Number 19. We call Markov. Mashma da'afa Rambam. Loika ama elekasi oisi chibuk v'nishuk derech taivas beer. He says, look at the Rambam, look at the Rambam's words. When the Rambam said that touching is prohibited, he said, derech taiva, in a sensual or sexual way. Shehari matzinu b'shash, b'kam aduchti. Don't we find all around shas? The rabbis of the Gemara hugged and kissed their sisters, they hugged and kissed their daughters. We'll get to sisters and daughters in a minute, okay? It's clear in the Rambam, and he quotes the Rambam again, derech taiva. This Shach seems to be saying very clearly as follows. If the touching and the kissing is not sensual or sexual, now touching can be kissing, I'm not sure, we'll talk about that soon. I mean, one of my students once said to me, I'm from Mexico, she said to me. Where I come from, when people greet strangers in the street, everybody kisses everybody, all the time, even on the mouth. Everyone kisses everybody. She says, for us, it's just like a handshake. It's not derech taiva. That's an interesting question. You know, how do you classify that? One of the guys in the yeshiva, which will remain nameless now, asked one of his rebbeim, I heard this story, he said to his rav, Rebbe, listen, I have a girlfriend. We hold hands. It's not derech taiva at all. It's completely innocent. What do you want to tell me? I hold my girlfriend's hand and I don't feel anything. What's about the halacha? He said to him, I'll tell you, you've got to get a more attractive girlfriend. Which is a good question. Where do you draw those lines? But the Shach seems very clearly to say, if it's not derech taiva, that's not the prohibition. Now, there are achronim, it must be said, and I brought you them in the footnotes here, the Sechemed, the Ezer Mikodis of Buchach, and the Prideya, who say, okay, according to the Rambam, it's not Doraisa, but maybe it's the Rabbonim. Maybe there is a rabbinic prohibition, even if it's not Derech Taiva, according to the Rambam. But that doesn't seem to be the consensus of Poskim, and we'll see in a minute, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the consensus seems to be that no, it's either all or nothing. If it's Derech Taiva, it's Doraisa. If it's not Derech Taiva genuinely, it's Mutter. And this idea of being a drabonon in the middle, even though some achronim hold that way, the mainstream sect is not that. So let's translate that now as a rather lengthy introduction into our main shaila of handshaking and seat switching. So the Gemara actually obliquely deals with the hand issue. Number 20. A woman who is a sota, who is coming to the Bet Mikdash, has to bring a korban, and one of the things she has to do, she has to wave it. She has to lift it up and down and side to side, and the Kohen will have to guide the hands of the person who's waving the korban. So look at what the Gemara says. The Mishnah number 20. Hayanoitel et minchata. The Kohen will take her korban mincha, mitoch kvifat mitzvit, in a certain kind of basket, unetuna, v'noitna, sorry, letoch klisha, right? And he would put it into the special vessel, the flour offering, of this case, the barley offering, that she'd be bringing as the korban sota. And he put the kli onto her hand. So she's now holding this kli in the Beit HaMikdash to do the waving offering. And the Kohen would put his hand under her hand, and would do the wave. The Gemara immediately in Rishami picks up on this. What? The Kohen has his hand under her hand? Is that not inappropriate that the Kohen is holding this woman's hand in the Beit HaMikdash? So the Gemara gives three answers. Maybe Mapa. Let him bring a cloth in between them. So there's no touching. The skin's not touching. Which raises an interesting question. Does Shomer Negiah differ if you want to shake the Queen's hand? The Queen always wears gloves. Okay? Does that make a difference to the Shmiras Negiah? Now, the Gemara wants to suggest here, it might do. In practice, most poskim say it doesn't really make any difference whether you're touching the skin or touching the glove, but it suggests this, but then rejects it. Says, no, that can't be. that makes a chatzitza, a completely separate din, which you can't have anything in between the hands of the kohen and the hands of the person. That's called a chatzitza. You're not allowed that. So he says, we can't use the cloth. Doesn't help. Okay, well, maybe kohen zakein. Bring an old guy who's a bit past it, and he's going to trundle in, and the sheikh, he'll pull the hand up. So the Gemara says, no, afilu tema yelet. You can even bring a young man in. Or, why? How come? She'ein yetzahara motzi l'shah. Because we're not worried about yetzahara if it's just a few moments. Okay? They're not walking down the street holding hands. He's just putting a hand up and down. Now, interestingly, the Gemara doesn't say, oh, in the Beit HaMikdash, everybody's very frum, everyone's very holy, it's different in the Beit. No, he doesn't use that argument. He could have used that argument, that the Kedoshim are holy. It assumes that even in the Beit HaMikdash, there could be Yetzirah, which is interesting. Ein Atitropos La'arayas, anyone, anywhere, okay? But it says that for that short period of time, maybe we're not so worried. We'll see how that comes in a second. The Sefer Chassidim is the first source that explicitly talks about handshaking. Sefer Chassidim in 12th century Germany, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid says in number 21, Loi yitkayudi yado. A Jew may not stick out his hand, bekafa nachris, into a non-Jewish woman's hand. Veloi anachris bekafis Yehudi, and a non-Jewish woman may not shake a Jewish man. Veloi Yehudit bekafa nachri, and a Jewish woman may not shake a non-Jewish man's hand. V'loy hanachri b'kaf Yehudit, and a non-Jewish man may not shake a Jewish woman's hand. Af al pi shehayad mu'utefet b'beged, even though she's wearing gloves, he doesn't like it. Siag, this is a fence l'giloy arayot, because what starts as a handshake can move on beyond that. He didn't like that. Now, interestingly, he talked about between Jews and non-Jews. He doesn't mean that between Jews and Jews that's better. He's just assuming that Jews and Jews understand that that's not what Jewish people do. Non-Jews won't understand. They'll be offended in work or whatever. In the 12th century, people also had interactions with non-Jews. He says, even a non-Jewish person, you can't shake their hand. And he says, it makes a difference between man and woman and man. Interestingly, there may be a slightly different halakhic position for a woman, Jewish woman, to shake a non-Jewish man's hand, because the relationship between a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman is effectively halakhically the same as with a Jewish woman. A man is prohibited to have a relationship with a Jewish or a non-Jewish woman at the same level, pretty much. But for a woman and a non-Jewish man, maybe a little bit different, and there may be more reason to rely on a leniency. We'll see a little bit later on as to how that comes up. So the Sefer Chassidim is not happy about it. There are three famous tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein in number 22 says, number 22, Lahoshid Yad Le'isha. It's a push out your hand to a woman, kederech hanotnim shalom v'hipaksham. Like people greet each other when they meet. Rav Moshe is writing this in the 50s. Okay? Pashut she'asur. I'm absolutely clear that you're not allowed to shake hands. Af lepnuya, even to a non-married woman, who of course is a nida and Arab in the same way, as we said. Shahari heim nidot. Kol shekein la'ishis. All the more so to a married woman, no handshaking, pashut she'asur. And in another place in the Igros Moshe, also in Evan Ha'ezer in Dalad, he says the same thing. However, in a 1962 tshuva, he steps a little bit back from that. Look what he says in 23. Ubedavar she'ra'ita. This is a later tshuva. He says to the questioner, I know that you've seen Sheyesh Mekilim, there are lenient people who shake hands with the opposite sex. Af mi yorei Hashem, and from people. This is not people who don't care, people who do care, they shake hands. Litem ladli ish, they even push out their hand too, hold out their hand to shake a woman's hand. Kishahi moshita, when she holds out hers, which there may be a distinction between who puts out whose hand first. Ulai saivrim de'ein ze derechiba. Maybe they hold that that's not called derechiba. Vetaiva, or it's not sensual or sexual. Avalamase kashelis mochalze. But I find it very difficult, he says here, to rely on this. That's what he says in his tshuva. So, interestingly, many Talmidim, or some Talmidim, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, well, in oral communications, he actually said to people that there are circumstances in which he does feel that it's allowed to shake a hand. Maseres Moshe, which was put together by Rav Moshe's grandson, he says there that a woman who puts out a hand to shake for the kinyan on Mechirat Chometz, if the Mechirat Chometz is done with a woman, he says there that Rav Moshe allowed shaking that woman's hands. And Rav Getzel Ellinson, in his famous Svarim on women and mitzvot, he says Rav Moshe made a distinction between extending a hand, which he said was clearly a male man extending his hand, one which was prohibited, and returning a a handshake which he said was difficult to rely on, but which he acknowledged that some people are more lenient on, and therefore Moshe's position on this is not 100% clear. And without any question, there are many people who've taken a very strong line on handshaking. And if you say it's potentially derech chibah, then you can understand why. Because according to the Rambam, it's d'oraisa, the Shulchan Aruch, and one might even be yahareg v'al yavor. Rav Avadya Yosef, very famously, was presented with the Israel Prize in 1970. Golda Meir extended her hand, and he did not respond. He nodded his head. People got very upset about that and said, you can't do that to Golda Meir. And he said, well, I just did. And he said it wasn't because of lack of politeness, it's just that I don't shake women's hands. A number of times the U.S. First Lady came to visit Israel as a chief rabbi, he would not shake her hand. There's a story about Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, who at a certain point was meeting the Queen of England, no doubt wearing her white gloves, and she extended her hand and he explained, he's very sorry, mom, but he's not able to shake her hand. And apparently he got a letter of apology from the royal household saying, oh, I'm terribly sorry, we didn't want to offend you, and we shouldn't have done that. So there are many stories of people, I brought you even a link here from a Chabad website who lists all the famous stories of famous people who wouldn't shake hands, there are many, many machmirim on this. Rav Binyamin Zilber prohibited as a Torah violation. Rav Menashe Klein strongly prohibits all handshaking. Rav Moshe Sternbuch, the Chazon Ish, supported a stepchild who would not shake his stepmother's hand. And people said that's not right, and the Chazon Ish says no, the boy is right. The Stiplagon said also you're not allowed to shake hands. So there are many, many machmirim, and in a sense that's a very important understanding to have, because one of the foundational halachas, look at number 24, this is brought at the beginning of the Torah, the Bet Yosef here, but I brought from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. The halacha begins with Yehuda ben Tema says famously, you have to be strong and swift, etc., like all these animals. What does it mean, az kanemer, tough, strong, like a leopard? Teirushai means, shalot yitbayesh, don't be embarrassed, he says, migne bnei adam hamal igim alaf, because people might mock us, or make fun of us, but avoid us Hashem Yitzbarach, when we do, we keep the halacha. We can't compromise on something that's halachic. Just like if somebody put a plate of tray food in front of you, you wouldn't eat it, just not, in order not to offend somebody. So too, you may not compromise other things which are halachically obligatory in order to avoid offending people. They are the machmirim. However, there is a large group of people who are more lenient on this, especially in the German poskim. Rav Shlomo Kalbach, not the singer, but the Rav, back in the early 20th century, he writes very clearly. Rav Chaim Berlin, who was the oldest son of the Netziv, he writes also very clearly that we do extend, well, certainly when a woman puts her hand out, it's absolutely the right thing to do to shake that woman's hand. And the basis for that is very clear. It's not derech chiba, and even more than that, if it's not derech chiba, the Shach would say it's mutter. But even if you were to argue, it's the Rabbonon. Make an argument, this Rabbonon. There's a principle of Kavod Habrias. What is Kavod Habrias? So look over on page 7. Tashma, we had a whole shir on this one. God will Kavod Habrias, Shidoches Loisar Sesh V'Torah. Embarrassing somebody, dignity of another person is so serious that it even overrides a Torah prohibition. So the Gemara qualifies. My, why? Lema, why don't you say, Ein Chochma, the Ein Tzvun, the Ein Eitel, and the Neged Hashem? You kind of rationalize away mitzvahs. Again, if someone puts a plate of tray in front of you, you don't eat it just to avoid embarrassing somebody. So, Tirgama Rav Bashva, Kameda Rav Kahana, so the Gemara answers, Belab de Lois Sosa. It's not any prohibition, it's Lois Sosa. Lois Sosa is the Torah prohibition not to break rabbinic law. And the Gemara concludes from that, if there's a din which is the Rabbonon, and there is a significant problem of Kavod Habrias, which it defines in certain ways, which I'm not getting into now. It's not everything can be pushed into the Kavod Habrias label, but where there is a real danger of personal dignity, of offending and embarrassing in certain situations, then there are many situations which a rabbinic law can be overridden. Says Rav Chaim Berlin, on the basis that the worst this is going to be as a handshake is rabbinic, assuming it's not Derech Taiva, then Kavod Habrias will override that rabbinic prohibition. On the other hand, if you really think it is derech taiva, then it won't help, will it? Because Kavod Habrias will not help you with a full-blown Torah prohibition, and we hold like the Rambam that this is a Torah prohibition. So, you know something, handshaking is not just the same thing wherever you go. There's a business handshake, the youth rabbi of the shul, 22 years old, is going to walk around and shake all the 18-year-old girls' hands on Good Shabbos, Good Shabbos, Good Shabbos. That's a different kind of thing. I know there are communities where they say, we're not going to employ a rabbi unless he shakes hands with the women in the community. I understand that, but there's a handshake and there's a handshake. Even a business handshake. I was a lawyer for 11 years, yeah? A lot of stuff goes on in the office. And some of it starts with a handshake and doesn't end with a handshake. And therefore one has to have a lot of seichel here. Rav Chaim Berlin clearly said that there is room to be lenient. Number 26, Derachecha Darchei Noam, V'chol Nesivah Zecha Shalom, that the ways of Torah are the ways of pleasantness. We shouldn't be walking around being strange and weird and offending people. Number 27, he also brings a Gemara in Yoma that Avat Hashem means being what we call a Kiddush Hashem, that showing Torah in a way that people look at us and say, oh, how amazing are these people, they keep the Torah, what a wonderful thing. And therefore, certainly there are people who are lenient, and for clear reasons. Even senior poskim, they're lenient. So you get the whole gamut of a range. There are poskim that will say, you have to die rather than shake the woman's hand. And there are poskim that will say, you may not refuse the hand if it's a clearly a situation which is not derechibah and everyone's l'shem shamayim, etc., etc. This raises other more modern questions. By the way, there are all sorts of ways to try and get around this. All of you who are in business life, I'm sure, have seen this or tried this in different ways. People give all sorts of, you know, walk in holding, you know, bags and file folders and that sometimes, for me as a lawyer, that occasionally works, but not always. People say, you know, have a business card in both hands, like, you know, to put straight in. That's a bit strange, but maybe that works. I even saw someone suggest that when you're about to see someone cough, it's your hand very strongly, and then they will avoid putting their hand out. I'm not sure that will be particularly on the hand, like, oh, sorry, you know. I'm not sure that will help, but maybe it will. Maybe just an honest discussion sometimes helps. In that sense, that it's awkward and difficult, but sometimes, as we said, we have to be strong to keep what is a halachic prohibition, if it is a halachic prohibition. As I said, many people are lenient on this. Rav Herschel Schechter from YU, who is official posting for the OU, is lenient on this issue. If a woman puts out her hands, he will shake her hand and introduce himself. Some people go for the dead fish, you know, sort of. It's a question. Some people say that, you know, a firm handshake is better. What makes it less derechibah? A hard grip or a dead fish? It depends on how you look at it. You can see it both ways. One thing's for sure, the more teenage you're getting, people ask, what about a high five? Okay? You know, the more informal it becomes, and the more youth and teenager oriented it becomes, it gets harder and harder to halakhically justify it. I think social kissing is very difficult to actually fit in with this, in the sense of, and I know there are different cultures, and it's important to understand the culture. It's different in England. In England, people don't touch each other at all if they don't have to. Even their wives and children. In France, you know, people are all over each other all the time. But again, I'm not sure that you could really, sometimes the only real answer is the dead fish, and that sometimes works. Now, certain areas are much easier. Clinical touching, like medical issues, we paskin are certainly mutter. There is no suggestion of it being derechiba with a professional. Certainly, if it is derechiba, you've got a major problem of different types. Some people prefer the same gender doctor, same sex doctor, and that definitely is preferable if that's suitable and available. Similarly, working with elderly people, care homes and nurses, etc., there are many heterim that this is not, if a person falls over, etc., there are, it becomes a grey area. For example, hydrotherapy, someone once asked, they work in hydrotherapy, which means they basically sit in a pool and they kind of help people to move in different ways in a pool. On the one hand, that is physical therapy, and that is a legitimate sort of medical administration, if you like, of a care. On the other hand, it sometimes morphs into going swimming together. It depends on the situation, and in many cases will be fine, in some cases may not. What about a hairdresser? Is a hairdresser considered involved in their profession and therefore not a question of derech chibah? Again, there are hairdressers and hairdressers, I'll leave you to think about that one. Let's move on. Well, let's talk about seat switching, which is what we were here to talk about as well. Here we have to look at Rav Moshe's very famous tshuva about taking the subway on a busy morning in a rush hour. Number 29. Derech halicha b'subway u'b'buses. Are you allowed to go in the subway and the buses? Bizman she'olchim b'nei adam la'avodatam, when people are on the way to work, she'nim tzayim sham anashim v'nashim d'chubim zebazet, and all the men and women are pressing up against each other. She'kasher min yazem min igia. It's very hard to avoid touching other people u'd'chifa b'nashim. In mutter, is that allowed? As a lecha b'shaot e'lisham. Or maybe you have to go to work at 4 o'clock in the morning when there's nobody on the train. Meaning you can go to work, sleep, have a snooze at work, and avoid all the rush. He named San and the Gear with the Chief of Menashim. He says, from the point of view of touching the women on the subway, as Leika Shum Isur, there is no problem at all, says Rav Moshe. Mishum Deiza Derech Taiva V'Chiba, because that's not called Derech Taiva. The Kol Isan the Gear Ba'arais, who asked La Rambam, even according to the Rambam, Shezov Yishu Balav, who holds it as a Doraisa, the Moitikvu Doraisa, Dafka Derech Taiva, that's only when it's Derech Taiva. It seems pretty clear, says Rav Moshe, if it really is not enjoyable or sensual in any way, there isn't even an Issamid Rabbonon, it's not mentioned there. And that's explicit in the Shach, and he quotes the Shach there as well. Nevertheless, he says, Ladina Banashim Acheros, after ages, even if it's a married woman, or Benida, or even if it's a Nida, or Nachrios, Leika is a Shaloi B'derech Taiva L'Kula Amma. So the first thing Rav Moshe says is, it's mamash not a problem. It's not Derech Taiva, don't worry about it. V'chein Leika is the Mihai Taima Gam Leishev Etzel Isha. And therefore you can even sit down, says Rav Moshe explicitly, K'she Leika Mokam Acher, when there's nowhere else to sit, that's the only seat. The Gam Kain Einzer Derech Taiva V'chiba. That's not called Derech Taiva. You can sit next to someone of the opposite sex. With a wife who is a nida, it's a little bit harder because there's more likelihood of some level of intimacy because they're not strangers. So he says you try to avoid it, but even this is okay at the end of the day. And this can be a problem. Squished in the back of a car, you're taking a ride, etc., etc. Then he says at the end, Aval im yodeh shehu yavo yodeh hirhu. But if he knows that he actually does like being pushed against women on the bus, then you can't go. Then you've got to deal with that, and you can't go. As in ein nachutzlo, the imuchach, like if you have to go, as gam kein lavadasa ein la'aso. I'm not going to tell you can't get the subway. Be it chazek lahasiyach taito, you have to work on yourself, etc. Behenu laharah b'divrei Torah, think about Torah, listen to a shir on your earphones. And he says, "V'im yodeya shetiv ora." But if you know that you just can't do that, then you better go to work at 4 in the morning. Yes. Well, every case is different. There's a difference between a 10-minute bus drive being thrown against somebody on a bus, and there's a difference between being squashed 12 hours in a car next to a person that is actually quite attractive. Obviously, that's different. You have to use your seichel. You know, you have to work out what is going to be derech chibah. The minute you think that this may be derech chibah, and again, sitting on a plane, is that derech taiva or derech chibah? I fly United sometimes, and then it's like nothing is derech chibah. Even Al Al on the new planes, you've got a bit more room, whatever. But it's a good question. You have to, it's what they call the fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch, right? You have to use your seichel as to whether it is or it isn't going to be that way. But in principle, Rav Shlomo Zalman said the same thing, that there is no need to avoid sitting next to someone on a bus. They quote in the name of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, the same idea in the Rogachava Rav. But again, one has to use discretion on this issue, and where it could be more of a problem, there is room to be machmir. But again, I would bring this, and this is an important point, Chumrah has to be administered in a way which is long-sighted, and we talked about this when we talked about Matzah and such like that, the Chumrah on Pesach. Number 30, I brought you again, I'm not going to read it now, but the Mesilas Yesharim says you have to weigh up the long-term the implications of taking on a Chumrah, and also the downsides, if people will be offended, if it's going to cause problems, it's going to cause Chilul Hashem. When it comes to Halacha, like we saw, then yeah, we have to keep Halacha, we can't compromise it, even if it's going to offend people. But when it's Chumrah, and people are taking stringencies, there has to be a balancing act done as to where it's appropriate and where it's not. Yeah.
Well, some people it's a Chumrah, some people it's Halacha.
Well, if you hold that it's out, there are very few poskim that hold la halacha la maisa that it's also to sit next to a woman on a bus or a train. Very few poskim. In most cases, it's a question of korma. There are a few that say that you shouldn't, but most people think. It could be, and I'm not justifying that. I'm just saying they're not coming from nowhere. They're applying what is a legitimate chumra, but they have to be very careful how they apply it, and as you said, it may not be appreciated by other people. You can read the rest yourself, it's very straightforward, and I brought you the issue of relatives, which maybe we can touch on another time, but interesting, this, let me finish with this, I brought you on the back in case you're interested, the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America, of which I'm a member, and many, many people you know will be, have an official resolution about sitting next to women or men on airplanes. And you can read this in your own time. Basically, they say that they instruct their members of the RCA that if they are requested by somebody to move, rather than have her sitting next to someone of the opposite gender, they're entitled to firmly and politely say no, that is not the halacha, one is allowed to sit next to people of the opposite sex, and they've taken something of a stand on this. They're not saying that it's a mitzvah to try and sit next to someone of the opposite sex, but they're saying that you have to be, you have to understand the halacha on this, and you have to apply it appropriately. So you can read that on your own. I think you might find that very useful. So we'll leave that here. Next week I want to finish this unit by talking about the issue of yichud. And yichud actually does bring in some of the issues of relatives, of adoptive relatives, of step relatives, blended families, where people now, you know, remarry, second marriages, and all their teenagers are living together. Very interesting questions that come up. We'll deal with that, please God, next week. Have a great week.